My presentation is about a qualitative study that I did for my dissertation that I completed about a year ago. I'm not sure how it fits in the chronic disease management and self-care, except that maybe it's a way of backing up for a second and looking at healthy aging through the lens of how old people describe what healthy aging is. And we can sort of situate chronic disease management and self-care in that wherever our collective imaginations want to take us. So that's what I'll be talking about today. And also talking about community involvement. The people that are involved in the study, the participants, were all part of this California Senior Leaders Program that I worked with. And I'll talk a little bit about them as we go along. I have no relationships to disclose, other than my wife and my sister-in-law that are sitting in the back. There's the big question of the morning. Okay, I'm going to skip a whole bunch of slides because I have too many here, but I do want to acknowledge that Felicia and I, you know what, actually on my screen it's purple. I was going to say we both have the purple theme, which must be what we do when we talk about elders. So I'm here to talk about community involvement among elders, and I want to start by giving a little background about why this was even something I felt like I wanted to look into. Certainly we know, and everyone in this room knows, that elders have always held valued and very varied roles in our communities in many different ways, as grandparents, as parents, as uncles and aunties, as sisters and brothers, as historians, as storytellers, as community builders, as community activists, as community workers, as community volunteers, many, many different roles. And in my work with the California Senior Leaders Program, I was working with a number of elders throughout California who became part of this program. I'm not going to talk a lot about that in the 15 minutes I have. But they were engaged in different kinds of community work. Work that was about strengthening their communities differently defined in different ways. And oftentimes doing this in ways that weren't in positions that were traditionally seen as volunteer roles. So they weren't necessarily the tutors in the schools or the people that were working volunteering at the Red Cross or at the food bank. But they were people like spiritual healers. They were people like mothers who started advocacy and support program for mothers and grandmothers who had lost their mostly sons to violence in Oakland. They were people who worked to bring food gleaned from the farms to seniors who couldn't afford produce. All kinds of projects like that. So one of the things I wanted to start with was, and I'm going to do this mostly through my talk, is, oh, you're going to make me cry. This is very emotional work. Can't believe you're crying. Look what you did to me. Okay. That's why we're married, because we do that together. Okay. This is how one of the women in our project describes her role in her community, which is the Chumash Indian community in the Santa Barbara area in California. My work, oh, does this count as part of my time? My work is passing people over to the spiritual world. My work is praying with them, singing to them. I'm a fire keeper, so if somebody dies, we take care of the fire for 4 days and four nights. So many things in the world now have to do with money, and it doesn't have to be that way. It has to do with the heart and the love and the people. That's the kind of work I do. From another woman in Los Angeles who got involved in sort of a grassroots project that brought together African-American elders, men and women, to work on different, to train them in policy advocacy and be involved in policy advocacy on behalf of elders and primarily communities of color in the LA area. This is how she described getting involved. We just decided we wanted to do something to help the community if we could, you know, because let's face it, if you're black and old, it's a little bit different. I didn't know this would happen. Well, we know that everything is a little bit different for black people. But when you get old, it's compounded by people that don't care. Kids that don't care, the establishment that doesn't care, and you're black. And all this is thrown together on old folks. So this is the most recently inducted California Senior Leaders Program. These were not people that were involved in my project. That's why I can show their faces, because these were otherwise anonymous interviews. But this woman, Grandma Emma Curtis, is in our project. This was in March. She just passed away about a week and a half ago. She got up to the front of the room at the end of this conference where they all came together to share the work they do and be honored for the work they do in their communities. And she told everyone that what we're all doing is we're raising the roof for our communities, and it's now become the motto of the California Senior Leaders Program. So I was working on this project, and at the same time, what I started to notice, and Meredith Minkler, who started the California Senior Leaders Project at UC Berkeley, she and I started to see something happening around us, which was the promotion of volunteerism among older people as being something that was very good for seniors' health, that seniors ought to be involved with, that this was a great thing. We started to see this in the popular press, books written about how old people in our communities could transform our communities by getting involved in addressing the social ills that face us, and a lot of research that was being done to talk about volunteerism. There was also a number of policy pieces that started to become more visible. The White House Conference on Aging had two of their top 50 initiatives be about promoting volunteerism. The reauthorization of the Older Americans Act added extra funding for this thing called civic engagement. And even the recent stimulus package put more money into actually a severely underfunded program, the Senior Community Service Employment Program, which provides both job training and community service opportunities for poor and near poor seniors. So this was becoming a big deal, this promotion of civic engagement. Meredith Minkler and I were concerned because we felt like the way in which volunteerism was being discussed was separate from the bigger context of what does it mean to build communities where seniors are engaged and involved and welcomed, that volunteerism, while in and of itself is an important piece, that there were some ways in which it was slightly distorted in the way it was being promoted. And we wrote an article about it in the Gerontologist, which I can talk with you about later if we have time. But in essence, you know, in terms of the limitations of the research on community involvement in healthy aging, and the public discourse on volunteerism and healthy aging, the things that I have written quite a bit about are the ways in which civic engagement is seen in only one way, and that is this kind of formal volunteerism with a formal organization. There are elders all over the place that are meaningfully engaged in community, but they can't check the box that says I volunteer. And so when being told you need to volunteer to be healthy, where does that put the person in terms of what about my role? What am I doing? Also, looking at it in the context of volunteerism being talked about as something that's healthy for elders' health as an individual, that this is good for your physical health and this is good for your mental health. And ignoring sort of broader multiple aspects of health, social health, spiritual health, community health. What does that mean? And also, most of the research on volunteerism is primarily cross-sectional. So, you know, and many of the good people that are doing this research admit that we don't always know how much of this is people who volunteer are healthier or people who are healthy volunteer. And so what I wanted to do was I was in the presence of all these like incredible elders in the Senior Leaders Program that are engaged in volunteer work. You'd never call it that. But I was hearing stories about their experience, and I thought, I think this is just missing from the picture. That piece isn't wrong. It's just narrow. So I wanted to look into it a little more deeply. I'm going to skip a bunch of these things. So here were the key research questions I had. What meanings do elders themselves, who are currently involved in community work, hold about that involvement? What does it mean to them? How are those meetings situated in the context of their experience of their own aging? What does community involvement mean in the context of being an old person? And the third one, how do the elders think about healthy aging? How would they define that? What role does community work have in those definitions? Very quickly, I had some theoretical frameworks here. I think all I want to say here is that these are kind of, these are all interrelated, but basically I wanted to look at community involvement, not just on an individual level or an interpersonal level, but from a community level, from an institutional level, from a policy level, from a bigger environmental level. Let's look at ageism and what does that have to do with us? So when I was talking with them, with the elders about their work and their meetings, I was also holding this other thing here. The essence of critical gerontology is looking at aging and aging and health through two lenses. One, political economy, so looking at the structural factors that influence health and aging, and influence aging differently. Why do different communities age differently? It's not just because they're eating right or exercising, it's also because of, more so, because of the broader conditions in which they live. But secondly, critical gerontology brings in the humanities, looking at aging from the inside out. How do people make sense of their own reality? And how do they interact with that environment to negotiate their own identities as an old person? And I am so far behind. I'm just going to tell you this about methods. Qualitative study, 22 seniors. Three-quarters of them were from communities of color. About half of them were African American. About 20% were Asian American, 20% Latino, 25% white. Can't remember the rest. They're all on the slide, but I don't want to waste our time on this. I want to get to the, and 60 to 93-year-olds. So that's how we define old people. I use old instead of older adults. We'll talk about that later. I'm trying to get us used to being old. Exactly. Okay, so two kinds of findings. One area is the meanings that they hold about community involvement. The other set of findings are the meanings that they hold around healthy aging. Finding number one. One way in which the seniors talked about the work that they do was that they talked about it in the way of that I'm just doing what I can. So for many people, this is something that they had been doing all their life, whether it was paid work or unpaid work. That you know, helping other people is just what you do. And so for many of these people, they had been engaged all their lives. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I have oral histories for all these people. This is such a narrow view of what they told me. The book is coming out as soon as I get a book contract, and then you're gonna get a much better sense of what all this means. Another way that they talked about this was doing what I can to help people that I see myself in, seeing myself in others. So one 65-year-old Latino man I talked with, he spent 40 years of his life in prison, state prison, federal prison. Grew up in the streets of Oakland. His parents were both working. They were pretty much gone. He was extremely poor. The people that took him in as family were the drug dealers on the street. They fed him, they clothed him. Of course, he became a drug runner for them. He pretty soon became addicted to drugs. He went to jail a few times for selling drugs. Then he realized if you really want money, you go to the bank. So he went to the bank. Then he went to federal prison because he didn't go about getting the money from the bank in a way that you're supposed to. Anyway, so at the age of 65, duly diagnosed with mental illness and addiction, he decided he was taken in by an organization in Oakland and became a support for other people like himself. And here's what he said, if I can find that sheet without crying. I just love human beings. Aren't we incredible? I know I'm almost out of time, aren't I? No. Especially with addicts, I try to do what I can. My heart is really, really torn apart behind that because of my own life. These people that come to see them recover, it brings tears to my eyes sometimes because I just know where they've been at. For others, this was really about a sense of responsibility, whether it's a spiritual place they come from, a religious place, or just something that their parents taught them, that this is what I should do. For others, they felt like, as an old person, that this was something that they should do. That was not true of everyone. Some of them felt like, you know what, give me a break. I now get to do nothing and not be responsible, so I want to say that too. And for many, also, the doing what I can is also about not doing what I can't, and recognizing now that at the age of 75 or 80 or 85, I can't change the world in a weekend. I have a much better perspective about this now. So I'm going to do what I can, and you know what? People can do the rest later, even after I die, because some of this stuff, it's going to take a long time to fix it. I'm going to skip through a bunch of this. In addition to doing what I can, they talked about being in and building community. That community involvement was about making really important personal connections. It was about sharing knowledge and history with younger generations. So particularly for the Japanese American and the African American elders that I talked to, this was really important. One Japanese American man talked about being interned, and not just the struggle of his parents and himself when he was a kid, but really the struggle of his parents of being in the Japanese internment camps during World War II, but the bigger struggle of when those intern camps were closed and all of these Japanese American families had nowhere to go, had lost their land, had lost their business, had lost everything, and went out into a racist world to try to deal. And so for him, a lot of this community work was really about sharing that with the younger kids who didn't necessarily get it and really feeling like they needed to get it. And along with that was also this idea of building respectful multi-generational communities. So a number of the elders who grew up themselves in very tight-knit communities, either in the South or in California, in all Japanese communities, because that's what you did for survival and also just for love and connection, but feeling like that didn't exist anymore and feeling like their involvement was about trying to rebuild those places. I'm sorry, I'm skipping. Oh, there was one more here at the bottom, which is really important. And in many ways, this was so connected to the Native Americans that I interviewed, Japanese Americans, African Americans, the communities of color, that being in community was a really important component of survival, and that's why they did the work they did. I'm just butchering this. I'm so sorry. I have like 1 minute left, right? Okay, I'm going to just go through this. Okay. So community involvement was also about finding personal enjoyment. So one of the things that they talked about was that I'm not going to do this if it's not enjoyable. And the enjoyment came from different places. It came from just the enjoyment of doing the work. You know, it's just got to be fun. Also, the piece about making a difference and seeing a change, that was so important to these people. Being part of, somebody talked about stirring the pot of change. This was such an important part of it for her. And also feeling a sense of fulfillment from seeing that change. Oh, there are all their voices right there. They're stirring the pot. And then here's the other piece that I keep wanting to say to the promoters of volunteerism that we need to be really careful about. So much of this, talking about community involvement, was also about recognizing their role and their life conditions changing as an old person. And that community involvement was also about slowing down and stepping back. And the range of comfort with that, which I felt reflected the range of discomfort or comfort with being old and aging. So for this Japanese American man who had been involved in many ways in his community and did a lot of actually volunteer work that was about building things, and he's really struggling with this. I don't think I'm getting older, just my capacity's getting smaller, that's all. I'm not getting older. What I used to do in one day, it takes me 3 days to do it, that's all. I regret that. It's a little harder for me to move. I can't do it as fast, but I can still do it. That's the only thing that old age gets up on you. In contrast, I love this one. Oh. So this older African American woman was talking about the community work that she's been doing, and she's just like, time, I'm out. She says, and this woman has a lot of energy, mind you. I have sacrificed all my adult life doing for other people, doing for my family, doing for my children, and making sure they got an education, that they got a proper education. I was at everybody's school. I did that. So now it's my time, and I will say I heard this a lot from the women. And my life does not revolve around the whole entire community all of my life. I've got to step back from it now. Some people are reticent about passing the baton on, not me. I'm trying to ram it down their throat. Come on, take it now. The other part of my findings, which I'm not going to go about through for Pat's sake, because she's feeling really responsible right now, is about healthy aging. And I just want to say this. Can I take 2 minutes? Okay. Because I think this puts it in context, and in the context of the chronic disease conversations. Healthy aging was, of course, about taking care of your body. It was about eating right and exercising and all those things that we know are really important. And so that was like the first thing to come out of their mouth when you say, what is healthy aging? But then all this other stuff came out of their mouth. And the other stuff that came out of their mouths were, ignore the quote, having a positive approach to aging. Now that was talked about in a lot of different ways. It was talking about in the face of change, being able to continue to be positive in it all. And it was a struggle, but there was that. Where am I going here? It was also, and here we start to go through the ecological model here, living in a supportive and respectful environment. So what one woman said to me, if you want to know the demographics, 72-year-old African-American woman said, in fact, I'm going to find it. When I'm on that bus, this is her definition of healthy aging, being treated properly and with respect for the years that I've lived, that is part of quality of life for me. That is part of healthy aging for me. I can't feel that I'm marching toward healthy aging if people are treating me like crap because I'm aging. So there's a culture and a society that has to also change for there to be, for me, truly healthy aging. Yeah. Followed by, it's feeling free, letting go of what other people think that I should be doing and doing what I want to be doing. Followed by, it's how I'm trying to live. And what struck me, and it goes back to the title of this work, Aging in and on Our Own Terms, was that the meaningfulness of healthy aging for so many of these people was, it's like, it's what I'm trying to do. It might not be perfect, but this is it, because this is healthy aging for me. And I think with that, I will close. Thank you very much.